Hey, closet busters, come on and gather around. It's time once again to kick down those closet doors of life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemons, bold move expert and coming out coach, and I'm going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloseted. So come on, grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step in to living your truth as we explore more stories, tips, and tricks for living your life uncloseted. Now let's get to the show. Hey there, closet busters and bold move makers. This is Life Uncloseted. I'm Rick Clemons, your host, the guy who helps people make bold moves in their lives. And we're here to say, screw it. I'm going to kick down those closet doors of my life. I'm going to set myself free, and I'm going to live my life uncloseted without any apologies. And I know a lot of you have been through some challenges and struggles in your life, but I want you just for a moment, just for this moment, to imagine that the closet you live in is actually your own body. Yet that body that's keeping you hostage, you had no control over becoming the hostage to that body. Because in a blink of an eye, your entire life went from being free to suddenly being completely confined. In fact, confined to the closet of a wheelchair. Now, for most of us, that would probably be the kind of feeling of, oh my God, I'd freaking rather die than endure this kind of life. But not today's guest, because our today's guest is Jake French. He's a University of Idaho graduate, and he loves doing anything outdoors. And he doesn't feel anything, actually, from his collarbone down. And one of the things that I most admire about where he's gone from this journey that he's been in, he is a fellow member of the National Speakers Association, which I'm a part of, and he became one of the youngest chapter presidents in the NSA, and that's a pretty freaking amazing accomplishment. And I think something that's even more interesting about our buddy Jake here is he grew up in a town with more cows than people, and so I'm going to have to figure that one out when we get talking. But here's what I know about him, just from the little bit I've read and heard him speak a little bit on some of his speaking stuff, is that he has truly discovered that opportunities abound when you set yourself into a mindset of possibilities by focusing, adjusting your attitude, and realizing you have a choice. And with that, I'd like to welcome Jake French to Life Uncloseted, the podcast. Hey, Jake, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic, Rick. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, man. So I want to get the one thing that's just burning in my head. So you lived in a town with more cows than people. Where is this town? And I'm so curious. I love that because I grew up on a farm too, so I kind of relate to it. Give us a little insight about that, man.
So I grew up in a town called Duffer, Oregon. And most people give you that weird look your dog gives you when they don't understand something like, what is Duffer? Duffer is a small town in central Oregon where we had about 600 people. So going in high school there, you knew everybody.
Wow. I can relate to that. My high school graduating class, I don't think there was even 100 of us in my high school graduating class. I want to say there was like 72 or 76, something like that. Very small school. It was a private school. I think the total student body was like 500, maybe 600 at the most. I don't know. It wasn't huge. So I can totally relate to that and to growing up on a farm. So pretty cool. So how did that kind of life influence who you are today?
I feel so lucky to have grown up in the country because I was exposed to farmers, ranchers, loggers, people who often had to make do with the resources they had. And I think they instilled, even though I didn't realize at the time, but a sense of pragmatism of, hey, this is what we do, let's make it work. And that was something that guided me after I had this accident that changed my life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's it. I love that you said that they kind of showed you the light of, we just got to make things work. Because I know when I was growing up on the farm, my grandfather had a pretty good sized farm. I think it was total acreage was about 1200 acres. Farmable land was about 700. And, you know, there would be moments that it's hay in season and the hay bales are all you know, belled up out in the hay fields, and suddenly we get the word on the weather forecast that there's a huge thunderstorm coming, you know, and the thing you got to do is you got to try to go, okay, do we want to get these bales stacked, or do we want to let them sit out there and really not get protected and everything? So you got to make do with what you got. And it was always an all hands on deck sort of thing. And I agree with you. Those are the moments that I learned so much from the farming community about. You pull together, you make do with what you got, and you get going. So you've already kind of alluded to it. I've alluded to it in the intro. I'd like to kind of jump into the story, which I know you've told hundreds of times, and it's actually the platform that really helped you develop your speaking career. But you weren't always going to be a speaker, were you? There were other things heading down your path of life, and then suddenly a big snafu stepped in the way and, well, pretty much changed everything for you, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the first 23 years of my life, all I thought about, all I dreamed about being was a forester. So a guy who worked out in the woods and managed timber. And that's what I thought, what I was headed. You know, I just graduated from the University of Idaho in 2008 and had my brand new certificate and graduation and really my dream job as a forester. I was just starting at working for the Oregon Department of Forestry and worked there for just a couple weeks when it was my roommate's birthday party. So we went out to celebrate. We did a lot of drinking, dancing, fun times that night. It was on our way home where we ran into trouble. It was 2:30 in the morning. My friend stopped at a gas station to fill up, and we're looking at the gas station doors open, and this young guy about my age stumbles out. Even from a distance, you know, 30, 40 feet, we're just watching this dude. We're like, man, he is messed up. He was so drunk he could hardly stand. And so we're just watching this. And as he gets closer and closer, something clicks in my head and I recognize this guy. And I'm like, this is a one in a million chance. I mean, how random, how crazy is it that it's a town I haven't even been to in like 7 years. At 2:30 in the morning, I just happened to be there at the exact same time as the kid that I grew up next door to, like my childhood best friend. So as you can imagine, when you see someone that you haven't seen for a long time, you know, you're pumped, you get out, you run over to them, and we talk back and forth for 1 minute. We're so excited to see each other. And when I turned my back to get something in the pickup, that's when he made a bad choice. For some reason, he thought it'd be funny, I guess, to put me in a full Nelson headlock. And I don't know why he did this. We weren't wrestling, we weren't fighting in any way, but I think he was just trying to, like, you know, goof around like we did when we were kids and just still show that he was bigger. So with both of us having our balance impaired, we tripped and fell forward. And without the ability to put my hands out in front of me, the first thing to hit the pavement was my head. And when he landed on top of me, it snapped my neck at the 6th vertebrae. And in 1 second, I went from on top of the world forester to laying on the pavement, unable to move anything.
So in that moment, did you, you know, I'm sure you've been asked this question over and over again, but could you even comprehend what had actually just happened in that moment? Or were you just more stunned, like most of us would be, of, okay, I just literally fell on my head. I mean, was there any real recognition of this is really big?
I knew something was very wrong, but it happened so fast. I mean, I know it's a cliche to say in the blink of an eye, but it was instantaneous. It was just like, what's going on? Paul Nelson, boom, done. And I felt zero pain. I was just laying on the ground. I couldn't move anything. You know, you're just totally paralyzed. So I remember seeing my arms being lifted up, but there was a disconnect. I couldn't feel them. So I thought it must be something like a concussion or something that would stun you. You never think it's going to be something or change every minute.
I can't even imagine. I mean, I know the closest thing I've ever had, and it wasn't even close to similar, was when I almost drowned in the Colorado River right off the shores of my grandfather's farm. And I remember coming up like the third time from having been down, sucked down to the bottom of the river. And I thought, I'm helpless. I'm absolutely helpless right now because I'm so tired from trying to swim. I was caught in the middle of a whirlpool. And I remember thinking, nothing's working right. Nothing is working right. Even though I knew my arms were moving, my legs were moving, everything was happening, but my breathing was so shallow. And in that moment, all I could think of is nothing's working right. And then suddenly it did start working right. And that was how I got myself out of there. But I can't imagine what it must feel like to be laying there and going, okay, I don't really feel anything, but I don't really feel anything. You know, it's almost like a double-edged sword of, okay, I know I don't feel anything, but the reality is I really don't feel anything. So as things started to progress, when was it that the real reality set in and you really faced this like, oh my God, this is my life?
Well, I was awake for about 10 minutes. The paramedics showed up and, you know, put me on the life flight helicopter. I blacked out. I don't remember the helicopter at all. And I woke up in intensive care at OHSU, which is our big hospital here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. I guess I had one surgery to put a halo on and stabilize my neck. And mm-hmm. I was going to undergo more to fuse my neck, basically. And I remember this doctor looking down at me and he explained, you know, Jake, you had an accident, you broke your neck, you're now a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. These are words I'd never heard, didn't know what it meant. He says, you'll never move your legs again. You'll never move your arms again. And when we get done with this neck surgery, we don't think you'll ever breathe on your own again. Mm-hmm. And that's when it kind of hit me like, whoa, this is real. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the time, but that interaction with that particular doctor would really shape where I took my speaking business and ignite a passion in me to help other medical professionals learn to connect better with patients mm-hmm. so that they help us form better expectations of what we can do in life. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you go from being Mr. Forrester, ready to just be out in the outdoors, loving what you do, pursuing all that, to literally flat on your back going, now what's next? It had to be a huge, you know, I'm going to just say it had to be a huge mind fuck to suddenly be like, oh my God, this is now reality. So in those moments, what was the stuff that was most rattling through your mind? Like, what do I do next? Where does my life go? This really sucks. What was some of the normal human emotions that probably were showing up for you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, every emotion you can think of. It's so weird. You know, as a young guy, I was 23 and I had just had my whole life. I was independent. Mm-hmm. I could go out and thing. I loved to hunt and fish. I would go out and do just extreme stuff and you're just on your own. And then you wake up and all of a sudden your family's there, your friends are there, there's doctors and nurses and you feel like a little baby because you, mm-hmm. I couldn't move rooms. I couldn't do anything. So anytime you want to eat something, someone has to feed you or dress you or give you a drink. And it was just like a light switch. I mean, all that you can do anything, all of a sudden you're just there and you're like a child. And so that was tremendously weird. But that moment, you know, people were having a hard time because as hard as it is for you, it's equally as hard for the people who love you.
Well, yeah, because it's suddenly very awkward. You know, it's like you don't know what to say. There is nothing right to say. I mean, I've been through this with a couple of friends, and it's like nothing you're going to say is going to make – it's not going to change anything, and yet you don't want to patronize the person, and yet you don't want to ignore the obvious, you know, in the room. So yeah. How do – you know, it's one of those things I don't think any of us have been really trained well to go, okay, so how do we truly manage these most awkward places in life? Other than you just do it somehow.
Right. And there was this weird strength that came over me. I didn't realize it was there. I didn't intentionally do it, but I knew that I had to help the people around me mm-hmm. be strong, you know, because, you know, my mom just in that moment quit her job, quit her entire career that she'd done for 30 some years, mm-hmm. you know, to help me out. I was there, my brother. And I remember it was probably day 4 or 5 after the injury, you know, mom came into my room and you could see her face was red. She'd been crying, which is understandable.
Sure.
And she came in and was just falling apart, you know, and I don't know where this came from, but I just kind of looked over as much as I could. I couldn't really move my head. But I just mm-hmm. was like, Mom, would you just chill? It is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that was some of that, you know, farmer country mm-hmm. guy that I've been coming out, just like, you know what, this sucks. I hate it. It's not fair. So what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious because you just said it. So what sucks the most about it for you now, Jake? What is the thing that's like, this is the thing that I'll never shake, that this is really what sucks? Because I think all of us would finally start to move forward, but no matter what, some piece of this will always really, really suck. So what's the biggest suck point for you?
Sure. And as I go into this, it's not a poor me thing. It's just something that I got to deal with. We've all got our stuff. And when you look at I ride around in a wheelchair and I have regained about 50% of my rooms and people think, oh, you just can't walk. That must suck. And to me, that's not really even part of it. It's like, you know, it's just, I've accepted my body. Now it is what it is. I'm happy with it. I feel lucky. The thing that really is hard for me right now, and you wouldn't ever know it by looking at me, but I deal with debilitating chronic nerve pain, just unbelievable. I mean, every day on a scale of 1 to 10, I start out at a 6 and probably end up at an 8. It's crazy. And it's the most bizarre thing, Rick, because you can punch me in the leg. You can hit me anywhere you want, but my collarbone down, I will not feel it. Mm-hmm. But where I, it's just on fire, this deep, bruising, burning pain. And it stinks because for a guy that can't stand, I also can't sit. So like even if I was offered a 9-to-5 job, I couldn't do it. I just can't physically all day.
Is there anything that brings relief? I mean, is there any medication, any positioning? I mean, is it laying down that finally does it? What is that thing that can give you any kind of relief when that starts to hit that 8?
Beautiful women and fast cars.
There you go. That's awesome. See, and I think this kind of steps into what makes you who you are, because you focus, you adjust the attitude, you realize there's another way to choose things, and you know, it's part of it. And this is fairly common for people who are quadriplegics, right? To have this kind of nerve pain show up.
You know, maybe 1 in 4 I've seen have pain, and it's very different for everybody. It's hard to say because it's subjective. Yeah. From the question I've asked people, it doesn't seem like, you know, the 1 in 4 that has pain, not many have it as intensely as I do, I think. You know what? Life happens. That's the title of my book. Life happens, live it.
Yeah, so
I'm always trying new things. Just yesterday I was, you know, working with a person that does mind-body integration. And even though I haven't found a solution, I'll never stop because I don't want to let this injury, this pain control me. I want to live my own life, and I will. There's nothing to stop me.
So what gives you that drive and determination, man? Because I hear it in your voice. I mean, you know, here I am on coach. So I do much of my work over the phone. Rarely do I see my clients face-to-face unless I actually do use Zoom or Skype sometimes. But I'm really good at hearing what's in someone's voice. And as soon as you said those words, it's like, this guy is filled with determination. So what keeps you that determined and driving forward?
You know, Rick, nothing has changed. And for me, that's my driving force. I still want to be happy, just like I did before I was injured. I still want to be proud of myself. I still want to look at myself at the end of the day in the mirror and be like, damn right, I did that. You rock. And the definitions of what makes me happy and what makes me proud are different. But the goal of being happy and proud is still the exact same. So that's what keeps me going.
You know, I really appreciate that you brought that forward, because I think this is, you know, this is Life Uncloseted. And, you know, before we came on the air, I was, you know, kind of talking to Jake about how we've switched everything from the Coming Out Lounge to Life Uncloseted, because everybody's got closets they're coming out of. And one of the closets I think most people don't realize that if they just would shift the attitude would be, no matter what, I want to be happy. And I'm not saying we all can't walk around in perfect space like that, but if that's part of the focus, if that's part of the end goal, and each day we wake up and say, today I want to be happy, that's such a great place to start. Doesn't matter what the challenges are that come up on a daily basis. Doesn't matter if you go from, you know, nerve pain of 6 to 8, but if you know at the heart of what you really want is, I want to be happy. And I think so many of us, myself included, sometimes forget to wake up in the morning and go, okay, today is another day to be happy. We've been given that opportunity to be happy. In fact, every moment we're given the opportunity to be happy. But it comes down to one of your key principles is it's all about choice. So when you started figuring this stuff out, and I know you're like all of us, Jake, you're continuing to figure it out, but suddenly you realize that focus, attitude, and choice were really part of your mindset and strategies for really getting through this. How did the focus, attitude, and choice really start becoming the foundation for this beautiful work you do and the speaking you do?
Well, I spent 3 months getting my life back at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, and there were people with all kinds of injuries. I mean, you name it, strokes, burns, car accidents, spinal cord injuries like myself. And it was interesting to me. I saw, you know, so often we try to like correlate, oh, this person has this much money, so, you know, they should be incrementally happier than me. This person's body looks better than me, so, you know, of course they're going to be happier. Like, we try to put a 1 to 10 scale on everything. And I saw these people with all different kinds of injuries, and I didn't see any correlation to like how badly they were injured to their level of satisfaction and happiness in their everyday life. And so that kind of made me think like, man, maybe the challenges we each have to deal with, that doesn't have to define what kind of life we can live. And there was one thing in particular that really struck me, and I don't mean to run her down, but we're in the therapy room one day and there's people with crazy injuries in there. I mean, one guy was burned so bad you could hardly recognize him, and another guy had lost both his arms and both his legs, and these were hurting people. And as we're sitting, do things like sit on the edge of the table or work with a prosthetic, we all stop and look over as this young, beautiful girl, probably 22, walks in. And I mean, this is a person you don't see in a hospital. She's like got the makeup, the beautiful hair, the pearls on, looks like she just walked out of a magazine. And the only thing you could tell that was going on with her is she was using a walker with just the slightest limp. And so who's the new gal? Well, she sits down at the table next to me and proceeds just to break down crying and explaining just how her life was over and she didn't even want to keep on living. And really the crux of this meltdown was because after her small stroke, her friends saw her in a wheelchair once. And I'm looking around at these people who are going to have to work the rest of their life to be at the point where I was. I look back, I'm like, God, I'm glad I'm not that way anymore. And I'm thinking like, are you freaking kidding me? I mean, come on, we would kill to be at your worst day, you know? And
exactly.
That's a sense of perspective. Again, not to run her down, because that was the biggest thing in her world. Right. And I get it, you know? But just a sense of perspective that, you know what, it's a lot of times we're going through stuff and it's not perfect. It's not ideal, but you know, so what? What are you going to do to make it better? Mm-hmm. We've all got our stuff.
You know, and it's interesting because it was her deal. That was her worst for her. And I think that's something we all forget sometimes is, you know, what's your worst for you, Jake, is maybe something that I could never have be my worst for me. But then there may be something that's my worst for me that you look at and go, oh my God, I can't ever imagine having that happen. And this is where I think the empathy piece starts to show up. Let me be empathetic to what they are and where they are and what they can endure, plain and simple. And for her, that's all she could endure. Yet for you, you're like, I wish I could have that best day be her worst day. You know, that it's so interesting. And I think sometimes we all just forget these different layers. And what we don't grasp is, okay, maybe I'm being shown this because this is a teaching moment for me. This is where I begin to see what's possible. This is where I begin to find my new attitude and my new choosing of how I can be in the world. And I love hearing stories like this because I realize these are the moments. These are the moments that we as humanity show up and we show each other what we need to show each other so that we begin to appreciate, wow, I'm pretty dang thankful. Because what I heard as you were describing that is you also were able to look around the room and go, well, you know what? I've actually got it pretty good compared to some of these other people.
Yeah, you're right. I call it stare, but don't compare. You know, it's fine to look at other people and absorb what they're doing, but it doesn't do anyone any good to compare, like, oh, this person's so much luckier than I am. You know, they have all the stuff. Or even say, you know, well, like I did with that gal, you know, at first I was kind of angry, like, oh my gosh, this gal has it so easy. I wish that could be my deal. But you're right. I think we need to take empathy, because anyone listening out there, whatever you're going through right now, we've all got stuff, whether it's at work, you know, we're really stressed because our boss is asking us to do more than we can, or your kids, or health, or family. Give yourself credit. I mean, that's the biggest thing in life. Don't look at me and say, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this way. I'm such a loser because, you know, Jake's dealing with this. You can see what I'm dealing with. It's visible. But whatever you're dealing with, that's as big and just as real because it's in your life. So give yourself credit.
Well, I think part of giving yourself credit, you know, And I think it's Teddy Roosevelt. I think it's his quote that says, comparison is the killer of joy. And every time I think about comparing myself to someone else, the moment I even consider comparing, I realize how much it kills my joy of what I'm wanting. So whether it's me comparing myself to a fellow speaker or comparing myself to someone else, you know, right now we're in the midst of a house sell and everything going, okay, our house is gorgeous. It's beautiful. All this stuff. We get rave reviews about it. Why isn't ours moving? But yet one down the street moved. But as soon as I have that thought, it kills the joy of what I'm trying to experience. I'm killing the joy of getting ready to move to a new home and to a new place where I really want to be living, or comparing myself to a speaker and going, gosh, I wish as soon as I compare myself to another speaker, I lose the joy of why I want to be a speaker. And I think these are the moments that each of us, if we can just grab onto, I love the, you know, stare and compare thing you just did. It can kill us. Literally kill whatever we're wanting in our life. And, you know, whatever someone's personal belief system, God, the universe, whatever it is, the higher power, I honestly believe sees that and says, okay, well, I'm going to come back and I'm going to teach this lesson to you again until you start understanding the comparison thing is the thing that's keeping you from being your most beautiful, authentic self that you're meant to be here on the planet. And I think a lot of us could use to really learn that lesson.
That's so funny. I just read that quote for the first time and I wrote it down. Oh my God, this is the best quote ever. Can you repeat it? The quote?
Yeah, it's comparison is the killer of joy. And it makes so much sense. I remember the first time I read it, and it wasn't that long ago. It was like a year and a half ago, maybe at the most. I actually think I was attending an Oprah weekend in San Jose, and I kind of think that may have been when I heard it the first time, because I think she said something about it from the stage, and then like a few months later, I actually saw it in print. But I thought, that is so true. Because I used to be, and I still tend to, because it's part of my DNA, I used to compare myself a lot. And then I realized every time I compare myself, I lose steam. I lose motivation. I lose focus. And now that I realize that that's part of my own personal mindset, as soon as it starts to come up, I'm like, okay, Rick, do you really want to go get lost? That's actually the question I ask myself. Do you really want to go get lost? Because I know what will happen is I will get lost. I will lose any focus. I will lose all my motivation. I definitely will lose any joy and happiness because I get too wound up in thinking about, oh, wow, I'm not as good as someone else. And now that I can do that, it's kind of similar to what you're talking about, where once I can focus on knowing that that's what I don't want to do, it helps me change my attitude and it helps me see I have the opportunity to choose not to be here in that moment in that way. I can choose to go, wow, look at Jake. He's done really well. He's got a great speaking career. And I can't wait to find my path doing that in my way so that I can have the influence he is. And I think that's the difference, is when we can do that flip around, then suddenly there's no reason for comparison to kill our joy.
Yeah, you're so right. And I've set up kind of a filter system to help me manage emotion. Because of that, Bill, you know, I see you may have met Chad Hyams. He's another speaker of the National Speakers Association. Mm-hmm. He's a quadriplegic. The guy's just out there killing it. You know, he's just making millions of dollars and making a huge impact. So I kind of get down when I compare myself to him. And so I've set up this system. Whatever the emotion is, whether it's jealousy or, you know, you want to be angry, maybe the guy who broke my neck or people you see on TV, I look at it like this. If the emotion doesn't help to move me forward, I don't have time for it. If it doesn't serve you, get rid of it. You're too busy.
That's awesome. That's a great way to look at it. I've heard it in different ways, but I like the way you just framed it. If it doesn't move you forward, get rid of it. Because most emotions can actually get in our way. If we really think about all the emotions, you know, and I've done this a couple of times with clients, I'm like, let's look at the emotions chart. You can download them. So anybody listening, you can actually go Google emotions chart. And you can find 100 different ones. But if you actually go and look at most emotions on an emotion chart and start to count positive, negative, it's kind of scary how many emotions are not something that can actually make us happy or move us forward. So many of them aren't. And so this is why I think mindfulness and everything has become so popular, is when we can actually stand in the presence of our emotions and look at them and use that emotional intelligence to go, do I choose to be this way? Do I choose to stand here? Do I choose to take this emotion and let it, you know, guide me in this moment? It's a very powerful space to be. And it is the thing that then can move you forward. Or you can choose to say, nope, this isn't moving me forward. And I'm going to figure out the one that can move me forward rather than allowing this other one to get in the way and drag me down. So I'm glad you brought that up. There's something else you said too, Jake, that I thought was rather interesting of, you know, the scaling thing. You know, you can say, oh, I'm on a 6 or an 8 as far as the pain. But when you said something about happiness and the happiness scale, I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if some of these things we didn't put any kind of scale on? Like there's no levels, you know, different levels of happiness. You're just happy. That's it. You're just happy. You don't have to be super happy. You don't have to be a 10 happy. You don't have to be a 5 happy. You just accepted, I'm happy. I just wonder, just because it came to me, I'm going to throw it at you and go, what you're thinking about what I'm saying? It's kind of an interesting concept to go, what if we didn't put different layers of happiness or different layers of excitement? We're just excited. We're just happy. We're just content. There isn't any number assigning to it. So I know we're in the moment. I'm throwing that at you, but you may not have anything to comment on, but I'm going to let you go for it.
No, I like it. It makes sense to me. I think we could be more present and just enjoy the now, because we have this tendency to think, at least I do, well, if I just get this, once I achieve this, then I'll be happy.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm riding in a Corvette, but if I had a Lamborghini, I'd be that much happier. It's like, no, just enjoy that you're in a cool car and love it now. Don't say, well, my friend has one that's, you know, a tenth of a second faster, so he's incrementally happy.
So I'm curious, since the accident, what is something you're most proud of having done in your life?
Let's see. I'm really proud of getting back to the outdoors. You know, it's I'm a big outdoorsman, love fishing, hunting, just anything outside. And it took me years to figure out how to hunt again, you know. Doing something as simple as using a rifle is hard because I don't have great hand function and I can't hold it up. But just last week, actually, I was in Northeast Oregon, way out in the woods in the snow, hunting big bull elk. I'm so proud that we figured out how to do that. And even though I wasn't successful in harvesting an elk, I was successful just in getting out there and spending time with my brother and my friends. That's something I almost gave up
on. I know. My mind's going, okay, you just told us this, but I'm curious. So how do you do that? I mean, here's a guy who basically, for all intents and purposes, is like bound to a wheelchair. So how do you get outdoors? How do you get out there and hunt and be in the snow and do all this? I think the listeners would love to kind of get the, like, okay, here's the behind the scenes look at how Jake pulls this off, man.
It's kind of like Rambo, you know, I just put a knife in my teeth and crawl on my elbows. Kind of
okay, cool.
Deal.
Yeah, smart ass. That's what I was expecting you'd say. So
the other version of the story some people hear is that I'm a big weenie and I ride around in a pickup with the windows up and the heaters on, which is really what I do. And, you know, I've hunted all different ways, but I've found that hunting from a vehicle tends to work the best for me because I can keep warm, and that's a huge thing for me. But it creates its own challenges. Like last weekend, every day on elk, but I just couldn't drive to them. There just wasn't roads there.
Right.
But that's all part of it. You know, if you don't hunt, that's fine. And if you do, you'll know that most of the joy comes from just the challenge of being out there and now having a glare challenge. And, and to how I actually shoot, I'm not strong enough to hold a rifle. So I rest the end of it on the window. I use my left to hold the buttstock against my shoulder, and I use my right hand to kind of wedge in the trigger guard and pull the trigger back. And and it's tough. I've learned to be a pretty good shot now. I just have to be extremely picky about what shots I take so that I make an ethical shot.
Amazing. So I can relate to much of that. I'm not a hunter, but my dad is, and I grew up in Colorado, and he used to elk hunt, and I know how you know, especially elk. I mean, you got to get way back in there to get them most of the time until, you know, until it's that time of year where they come down. Of course, about the time that they're ready to really come down to where they're closer, then hunting season's over because, you know, we can't hunt them when they're like sitting right in the backyard, of course, you know. That's amazing that, you know, again, I'm going to go back to your foundation of focus, attitude, and choice, that it's just continuing to show up as I have this conversation with you. It takes a lot of focus and attitude and choice to figure out, okay, how am I going to get back out there in the outdoors? And some people would just give up, but you just keep persevering, man. It's absolutely amazing. And you're an inspiration. In fact, you know, JakeFrenchInspires.com is his website. So go check him out, everyone. I have another question here before we wrap it up. So writing the book, most people, myself included, people go, so what inspired you to write the book? I'm not going to ask that question. I'm going to ask a different question. What could have kept you from writing the book?
Fear. I wasn't a writer. I had no idea how to do it. There were so many unanswered questions. What would I do with it once I wrote it? How long would it take? I mean, how could I type? I couldn't really use my fingers. Mm-hmm. So just fear of the unknown. And it was paralyzing. And the way I got through it was finding someone who's done it, finding as many people as I can who've done it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, why blaze the trail? And there's so many people who have gone down that road. I asked for help, and it was amazing how willing people are to help you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, whatever you're going through, you will be astounded. If you just ask how mm-hmm. many people are out there, they'll give you the shirt off their back to help you.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you said that, because that's kind of been the underlying theme of this podcast, even as, you know, we've migrated from the Coming Out Lounge into Life Uncloseted, is you're not alone, number one. Number two, many people have blazed the trails ahead of you. And finding the trailblazer doesn't mean, oh my gosh, I got to go find the best one. No, there's trailblazers all around. Each and every one of us have done some aspect of even the journey you're challenged with. Even if we're fully functional and we have and can feel everything from our necks down, there's pieces of our journey that we can share with you as a fellow author. And that's why I never ask the question, what inspired you to write the book? I'm always, what's the most challenging thing that came up for you as you wrote the book? Is because I want people to hear those pieces. Those are the pieces that made the book come to life. It isn't, why did you choose? Yes, that's part of it. But to me, the real nuts and bolts of the book is, what would cause you to have quit? What were those moments that you're like, screw this, I just can't do this? Because that's the stuff that inspires people. And there's where the trailblazers show up, is when you can see the challenges that somebody else had. I remember getting completely done with my book, and then I started rereading it. And I thought, this thing sucks. It sounded so stiff and not like me. And that's when I said, okay, I'm rewriting this book. And I went back in with my humor. I went back in with my alter ego. And I'm so glad I did, because I was at the crossroads of either throwing the book aside and going, I'm not going to publish this, or I could choose to go back through and go, no, this is the way Rick would really do this. And I know this about myself now as a writer. I will write it like very stiff and everything, and then I've got to let something sit, and then I'll come back and go, okay, now where's the sassy Rick? Where's the bold, brash Rick? Because that's the one that's going to go tear it apart and rewrite this thing. But it's amazing when you can see those sort of things in yourself. So what's the best benefit now that you've written the book? What's the thing that it's given you most by having that book out there in the world?
It provides a fantastic takeaway for someone who has, you know, met me, had lunch with me, or heard me at a speech. Because so many folks will say, oh, I wish my husband could hear this, or, oh, I'd love to take this back to my boss so we could use it with our team. And now I have something to give them so they can do that.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's amazing. And I love the books. You know, a lot of authors say, oh, it's my calling card, or it's, you know, the way that people can do more work with me, or, you know, people can take stuff back. And what I see is, I actually said to this once at a book signing, it's like, here's a piece of me. Hope you enjoy it and hope you learn from it. Because that's what I see. Every time the book goes into somebody else's hands, I realize it's a piece of me that somebody else is inviting into their life and into their world that I hope has the impact that it's meant to have on them. So I got one more question here, Mr. Jake, and I'm so glad we had this time to really chat. I can't wait to hopefully meet you if we both get to cross paths at NSA, National Conference, each year. you know, this is Life Uncloseted, and you've obviously come through your closets and continue to come through your closets, even as you're dealing with the nerve pain and stuff. But if you could leave a piece of advice for those who are like, okay, I need to just make my bold move. I want to step forward. I want to do this thing I'm being called to do. Or maybe they're stuck in something, a very similar space that you are, where they're like, okay, I've been dealt this closet of life and I just don't fucking know how to deal with it. What would be a piece of advice you'd love to leave with the audience today?
Ask yourself what you want. Mm-hmm. If you want to succeed, you want to be happy, you want to find the good and the humor in things, any given situation, there's opportunities to find those. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, if we want to find reasons why the world conspires against us, if we want to find reasons why things aren't fair, if we want to find reasons why we can't do it, in that same situation, there's those exact same opportunities there. It's just, what are you looking for? I mean, the situation's a given, it's a thing, but what we're looking for determines what we find.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because last weekend I was at an event. I was coaching people all afternoon long, and somebody sat down and basically said, I've worked with lots of coaches, I've worked with lots of spiritual advisors and everything, and so what all of them tell me is, I've got to get clear. I've got to get clear, and I don't know how to get clear, and so please don't tell me I've got to get clear. And I said, okay, then what do you want? And she goes, and don't ask me what I want. I said, okay, well then, you've got to determine the thing that's going to help you get where you want to go. I said, you have to do that. Not the coach, not the person that's trying to do it. You have to determine what it is you want to do to get where you want to go. And she got really, really quiet. She goes, thank you for being the first person who didn't tell me you got to get clear and you got to do these other things. She goes, you said something different to me. And I kind of picked up that same thing in what you just said, even though you did say get clear and get focused. What I did was I end up giving her a different choice. And I think sometimes that's where we all trip up, is we get stuck in a mindset or an attitude set that we don't think we have a choice. When in reality, we actually have more choices, and it isn't just this or that. It can be this, that, and more. What's the and more? What's that beyond just the two options? And I think that's what you're really bringing forward in the work that you're doing, Jake, is that focusing on what you want, finding the attitude that fits, and realizing you have a choice that actually creates the possibility and all the different strategies for getting through life in the way that you can. So thanks for being here, man. I just really enjoyed this conversation. You're an amazing, inspiring person, and I really can't wait to meet you in person, brother.
Well, thanks, Rick. This is just a start. I'm excited to see where life goes, and hope our paths cross soon.
I do too, man. So, and for all of you listening out there, just keep sticking with us, and we're going to call it a wrap for this episode of Life Uncloseted. And that's it. That's a wrap. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end. But don't worry, we'll be back in just a couple of days with another episode with new guests, new tips, new tricks, new wisdom about how you can go live your life uncloseted. And you know what? A lot of people out there may not even know we exist. So if you feel so compelled, share us. Tell people about it. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. Share it from your phone. Wherever you can, spread the word. Because the more people that we reach, the better the planet will be when everybody is living their life uncloseted. I'm Rick Clemens, the host of the show, that big, bold move expert, and that guy that constantly wants to help people step out, step up, and step into living their life uncloseted. Have a great couple of days, everyone, and we will be right back with you very, very soon. Take care.